Hi, my name is Denise, and I am an adult child with a loving parent in the driver's seat. I am really grateful to be able to be here tonight with you and share my story. And I welcome all the newcomers and everyone else because I remember the very first meeting that I attended. And in 4 days, it'll be September the 10th. That was the first day that I walked into an ACA Red Book study meeting. And I never forgot it. And that's why I'm here. Because when I walked through the doors, it was in person just before the pandemic. And that'll be 5 years on the 10th of this month. My life has completely changed, and I hoped that this program would be the answer. I was in a couple of other 12-step groups because I was looking for a solution to my pain. I knew something was wrong, but I wasn't quite sure what it was. And so, and I prayed to a God I didn't believe in for help and led me to these programs. And this was the third program that I was checking out. And this one became my main program because it hit on all cylinders. And I'd like to read something from the Big Red Book. And it talks about us. I should have marked that page. It talks about, I'm not going to look for it because I have too many bookmarks in my book, that we as adult children have a very high tolerance for pain, and we can endure colossal amounts of pain and not even recognize the kind of pain that we're in. That was me. Because I was so shut down from the conditioning in my family, growing up in my family. My parents were not alcoholics. There was alcoholism on both sides of the families. And I never saw anything that was out of control. But when I did the diagram in the yellow book and filled it out to the best of my ability and then labeled the people in there. I started to see a pattern. And I'm not an alcoholic. My brother, that's 18 months older than me, is not an alcoholic. My parents are not alcoholics. My mother's father was an alcoholic, a functional alcoholic. He drank every day. I didn't see him all that often, but he always had a beer in his hand. But the thing that really puzzled me was my brother, he had one daughter, my only niece, and she turned out to be an alcoholic and a drug addict at a young age, and I couldn't figure out why. And this program in labeling my family tree helped me to see it skipped two generations. And she didn't have a choice because she grew up in the same dysfunction I did. And it helped me to understand because I couldn't understand why. But I do now. I do now. And I'm grateful that, that I wasn't an alcoholic. I have other things. I tend towards workaholism. I'm aware that it's an outward manifestation of an inward problem. So I worked and I accomplished a lot of stuff, but I also lost myself in the process. And what's so interesting was I got a lot of accolades for that. And so it was reinforced. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And I lost myself. I abandoned myself, and I abandoned myself many other ways as well. And that's really the root of my dysfunction is that nobody's home, but there's somebody at home today because of this program and all of you helping me, because I can't work this program alone. I tried. I'm an adult child. I can figure out anything, but I can't figure out this program. And so I'm grateful because in the process of learning to connect with all of you through making outreach phone calls every day and just sticking my neck out there and looking for people to build my support network, I learned a lot. And I have so many people in my life today who are trustworthy, who are safe, who are kind. They love me. When I need to talk to somebody, they answer and they listen. That never happened in my family. And so it's like flipping it, completely flipping my life around. And it's almost like I pinch myself because I went from so desperate to just having a beautiful life again. My life didn't start out that way, but that's where I found myself 5 years ago. And so I grew up in the Midwest. My father was one, the last of 14, and that's a lot of kids. And my mother was the oldest of three. And she and her mother, they didn't get along. There was something going on there. And I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm guessing that Wilhelmina didn't want to have a baby. And my mother came, she was born smoking a cigarette and barking orders. And so she was not an easy baby. And there was this conflict. And I picked up some of that because if she had conflict with her mother, guess what? She had conflict with every woman. And so I kept all of you guys away. I wasn't real well with women. And it's because my mother turned out to be a narcissist, and working with a fellow traveler pretty early on in my recovery, she called me and I thought, why is she calling me? All I did was cry at meetings. And, but she called me and we talked. And then I called her back the next week. And then she called me back. We've been doing that for just about 5 years. And it's like, I understand now why she picked me. We are so alike. Our families are quite different, but the dysfunction is so alike. And she was talking about her mother being a narcissist. And my head went, thank God. Well, give it a little bit of time. And I started to recognize that I had some of the same stuff that she was talking about. There were similarities there. And one thing led to another. And I remember the day I said to her, I think my mother might be a narcissist. She didn't say a word. And it was a couple of weeks later that I knew my mother was a narcissist. And when I could name that, it changed everything. Because we name what's going on. We name the past. We name that I was neglected. I had no idea that that was what was going on when I got in this program. PTSD? No. Trauma? Hell no. Right? Neglect? No. Abandonment? My parents were always there. I thought it was, they left you. No, they left me emotionally. That was the abandonment. They were never there emotionally. And it took a while to come out of that denial. But what I really get was I needed to get the unsaved people out of my life because I was dissociated almost all the time. And I had no idea that that was what was going on. And I'm going to read something here that talks about it's in step one. And I'm on page 122. We must admit that we are powerless over the effects of growing up in a dysfunctional home. Our lives are unmanageable regardless of appearances of self-sufficiency. That was me. Social standing or compulsive self-reliance does not equal recovery. That was me. We must realize that willpower or self-determination is no match for the effects of growing up in a sick family. We cannot figure it out on our own. We need help. We must shatter the illusion that we can reason out painless solution. It's talking about there was a share that was just before this reading. It says the share also represents the critical separation from family work, which is necessary to gain clarity about our lives. Separating from our family means setting healthy boundaries and removing ourselves from abusive situations and family crises, which are common for dysfunctional homes. Many times, adult children struggle in their ACA program because they cannot seem to break ties with destructive or manipulative relatives. We cannot grow or find our true inner selves as long as we engage in family dysfunction that is draining and unhealthy. Separating from our dysfunctional family is a healthy act of defiance. By doing so, we are challenging the authority of the family lie. We are making a statement that we will no longer be loyal to denial and dysfunctional family roles. This can seem frightening, but we have the support of our ACA group. And many adult children separate from their families with love, not abandonment. They need time away to focus on themselves and to disconnect from the gravitational pull of the dysfunctional home. And at the appropriate time, we review the relationship we want to have with our families. And we will choose to avoid some relatives and members because they are draining or abusive. Other relatives will accept us and encourage us on our new path, even though they may not understand or be willing to walk this way with us. And so it took me a while to understand that the people that were draining in my life, I needed some separation because, I was right in there with them. I couldn't tell if. Right. But enough time in the rooms, I started to recognize that I'm seen and heard here by you. And I'm respected by you. We have, the format of our meetings is an example of what healthy interaction is. And with enough meetings, I started to recognize that you guys don't interrupt me. You don't step over me. You don't tell me, oh, you shouldn't think that way, or why don't you get over it? All those things, right? And so it took me a while, but it became really, really apparent that there was a very big chasm between what was going on in the meetings and my friends and family. And so I made my escape. I started to set boundaries and started to separate because we were so enmeshed, I couldn't tell where I started or you began, right? And so that's what that whole thing was about. In a funny way, well, it's not funny, but something interesting happened on the way of that was I started to feel safe for the first time in my life because I didn't have abusive people around me that I didn't know were abusive. And with that, of course, it's a process. I started to be able to be here more instead of being dissociated for 95% of the time. And when I got around safe people, I started to feel. I didn't have to protect myself with all the armor, and I wasn't dissociated all the time. And so it was a process of recognizing I didn't know a safe person from an unsafe person. And I had to learn that, and also boundaries, because if I didn't know if somebody was safe or trustworthy, and I didn't have boundaries, the only thing I could do was isolate to protect myself. I had no idea that that's what I was doing. Funny thing, I was nicknamed Fearless Leader and the Lone Ranger. And I kind of chuckled at that, but you know what? I look back on that and I get it now. I was the Lone Ranger because I blazed the trail, but I blazed it because it kept me away from people and I was safer without those people closer to me. I don't have to do that anymore. In fact, I don't want to be the Lone Ranger anymore. Although when I go out and have fun, it's okay to be the Lone Ranger because I like to do stuff I like to do. And I take my inner family with me and we just go do the stuff we like. But that's not isolating. There's a very big difference between isolating and spending time with me, myself, my inner family. And the main difference that I recognize, because I've had to look at, okay, what's the difference between spending time processing and isolating? Because it kind of looks like the same. But it's really very different. And the main thing is when I was isolating before the program, I was hiding. I was protecting myself. And when I spend time alone today, it's because I need to spend time alone to check in with myself, to do some processing, and to just sit with myself. So I'm not hiding. There's a purpose of my alone time. And because of the Enmesh family, I mean, we were together all the time, but we didn't connect. We spent time around, but there was no connection. My parents died without me knowing them and without me and them knowing who I really was as well. And I have to say, the strangers that when I first walked through the worlds, you were all strangers, but guess what? Some of you know me. Total strangers got to know me, and my family never did. I find that really heartwarming because my recovery is about connection. I had to learn to connect because I didn't want to keep everybody away. And I have to say, life is really enjoyable having safe, loving, caring, kind people in my life that when I need something or I need them, they show up. I didn't used to have those kinds of people in my life because it's kind of hard to do that when you keep everybody away. And then the other thing that I also, because I was raised by a narcissist, I gave and 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 I gave. But it never came back to me because I never learned to receive. And I had to learn to receive. I had to let you guys in. And then I had to let you help me. Because there's one thing about asking for help, there's another letting you help me. And so it's all a process of understanding that I was terrified of people and I had no idea. And so there's a lot of things that I've learned in my program, but one thing is I now have a higher power that I didn't want anything to do with when I first came into the program. It's like, oh God, you're talking about God? Right? I grew up as a Catholic. My mother she learned to speak Latin, and she went to Catholic school and with the nuns and all that stuff. And every day she went to mass. I spent a couple of years, my first 3 years of school in a Catholic school, the same thing, only I didn't learn to speak Latin. And I remember sitting there going, well, let's look at the stained glass windows because I have no idea what they're talking about because they're talking about it in Latin. How dysfunctional is that? And so, yeah, so there's just a lot of rules, and so I stopped going to church. My parents did what they thought was a good example, but I didn't get anything out of that, and I get it now. I was dissociated. And so nuns running around with rulers and things like that, and I'm like, gone. And so I had to learn to get an open mind around this stuff. And in step three, it talks about the truth buster. And that's probably not the correct term, but what it talks about is that we take the attributes of our parents, our family, and impose it on our higher power. And when I read that, I thought, heck, no wonder. No wonder I didn't want anything to do with a higher power. And so listening to you share and talk about your higher power and how some of you didn't want a higher power either, but we developed it. And the main reason I developed it was purely selfish because I heard people in recovery speaking about their recovery. And all of the ones that were just making inroads into their recovery and recovering all had a higher power. And so now I want a higher power. Nobody was more shocked than I, but I started to get it, and that I needed something to turn over all of this stuff that I held on so tightly. Because my whole life, I could do it myself. I'm an adult child, and I had this idea because I got it from my parents. I can do it better. And I don't want to do it better because I don't know how. And so it was a process of me learning to be a little bit humble. I didn't have any humility because I got humiliated every day of my life in my family. No wonder. And so a lot of changes and a lot of understanding why I had the behaviors that I had and where they developed from. And the thing that really astounds me is that I developed 14 traits at a very young age to survive in my family. Nobody taught them to me. Nobody helped me to develop those. And that's how I survived. And I have a sneaking suspicion you all did the same thing. And how is it that all of us figured out the same 14 traits without anybody's help? And so it's like, okay, if that's how I got here, I can just reverse it. So I'm unlearning all my dysfunction. And I remember pretty early on in my recovery, someone was speaking and they said, there's only one thing we need to change when we get into recovery. And I thought, one thing? Okay, what is it? And they said, everything. That's true. My thinking changed, my perspective changed, my behavior has changed. The way I treat myself has changed. The way I treat others has changed. And when they talk about we self-hate, the self-hate comes from we're trying to turn our unloving, dysfunctional, hurtful family into a loving one. So I grew up without trying to fix everybody, make everybody better. And because we failed time and time and time again, this is the root of the self-hate. And I still had a hard time with the self-hate, but then, page 434 talks about self-love. And I thought, why in the world did they wait till page 434 to talk about self-love? And I'm going to read something from that one too, because it was like, why didn't they do that in the beginning? And what I came up with a couple of my fellow travelers, they said, if they would have put it in there sooner, we never would have understood it. And so, That's on page 434. It has been said that you cannot give away what you do not have. I thought, huh, that's an interesting concept. It has also been said that you cannot love another person until you learn to love yourself. Ah, you can, and claim that love with belief and consistent action. So I have to believe that I can love myself and I take the action to claim that. And part of that is stopping being harmful to myself, hurting myself. I didn't even know I was doing that. And how can an adult child who was taught from the earliest years to abandon themselves truly love from the inside out? Life beyond survival is a life of self-love, but the lack of self-love was our dilemma. And so it goes on. There's all kinds of good stuff on this page. But it says, we need a power to reawaken this love from within. The main, here it is. The main focus of this book, page 434. Okay. The main focus of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself to transport you from mere survival to self-love. 434. So right there it says, I need to find my higher power, and it's that relationship that transports me to self-love. Well, I thought about that. I was like, right? And then Tony A. Stepp says that our higher power loves us unconditionally. I didn't quite understand what that was because I didn't receive unconditional love. And then we are willing to accept our own unconditional love. And that process has completely transformed me from beating myself up with a 50-pound sledgehammer for all of the mistakes and all of that stuff to learning to love myself unconditionally. Because if my higher power loves me unconditionally, can I learn to love myself unconditionally? And what that looks like today is no matter what happens, it's okay. If my teenager comes out swinging and torturing somebody, because that's what she likes to do, it's okay. And she slowed down on that because I told her, I said, when you trust me, and hopefully I'm trustworthy enough, and you can tell me what you want, because I couldn't say no growing up in my family. So what did I do? I said, oh, sure. And never even thinking that I was ever going to do it, but at least I got that off of me. They were happy, right? And then they got really pissed off when I didn't do what I said I would do. And so that's where that was born. And it was because I couldn't be honest and say no. And so, yeah, my teenagers got a whole lot better with that. And she really slowed down, but I had to be okay with when I would see her with this rebelliousness, and she loved to torture people and punish them. Guess what? That's the family that I came from. And so I just would say to her, I see what you did there. And it's okay. It's okay. Now, 50-pound sledgehammer would have come out before, but that never got me anywhere. And so everything has now become okay. No matter what happens, it's okay. Because I used to scare the living daylights out of myself, and I'm sure that's where some of my dissociation came from, because I wasn't safe either. And so I grew up in a family that we kind of lived rural in Wisconsin, and we went from living by Lake Michigan to more rural, because that was where my father's work was. And that was the only time that we moved as a kid into the brand new house that they built. And the area that I lived at, there was a creek just down there. And I spent a lot of time at that creek. I got out of the house to get away from all the madness. And I learned to just be out in nature. Spent a lot of time in nature, and I really believe that was my survival. That helped me to survive. I'm looking at the time here. And so that's something that's really important to me today is, when I'm trying to connect with my inner family and finding the things that they like, I go right back to what I did when I was a kid, and that hits the nail on the head. And so I spend a lot of time in nature and also, finding other things that I like, but it's really tied to my early years and what I like to do. Go catch the pollywogs and have them turn into frogs, right? I volunteer at the zoo that's just up the street here, and I'm a docent for the Maasai giraffe. And I don't know why, but that the opportunity to spend time with these creatures. There was something that just lit me up. And I'm not quite sure where my love of giraffes came from, that and elephants. And so they said, which animal would you like to be a docent for after the training? It was a couple of months of training. And I said, I want to do it with Maasai giraffe. And they said, why did you want to do this? And I said, because you have giraffes and you will let me spend time with them. And it was miraculous what I started to see. I started to do that before I came into the program. Little did I know, higher power was working on me then. I was around a lot of little kids, and I started to see the way they interacted with their parents. And it really started to hit me that I never had that kind of interaction. And I was looking at the guy. Just, gosh, I wish I would have had that. And then the little kids would come because I did it every Friday morning and Saturday morning. I spent a couple of hours there and I had kids that would come up to me. They knew me and they would sit and we would talk. I never had that. I didn't have an adult that would talk with me. So it's all happening at the zoo. Let me tell you, I have learned so many things there. And one thing that really sticks out, they were opening up a new exhibit and we needed to have this meeting so that we knew a couple of things before it opened up. And someone was concerned because people were going to be going into this new exhibit with the kangaroos, the emus, and the wallabies. And the woman said, she said, so what do we do when the kids are kind of too loud? And maybe they're screaming or whatever. And this other woman said, oh, she said, I just tell them, don't do that. I don't like it. Why didn't I know that before? I did that in my life. Somebody did whatever or said something to me, and I now said, don't do that. I don't like it. How come I never had those words before? And so that totally changed the way I saw myself because now I had the words to say, don't do that. I don't like it. Because I would just be quiet. And I also learned there to let people help me. Because I started to realize that I kept people away. And they would say, oh, Denise, let me help you with that. And I go, oh, no, I got it. And there it was. I started to see that I push people away. It's safer that way. Well, I don't want to push people away anymore. I want to let them in. So I've learned to let people in because I know what a safe person looks like and behaves like. Now. And this is all part of my recovery because I didn't have all these people in my life before. I look very gregarious and outgoing. I kept the social calendar when I was married. And but the thing is you never got to know me. I could talk to anybody, but you never got any information that made me vulnerable to you. Because that was dangerous in my family. I learned how to talk to people going on the chairlift when I was a kid. I did a lot of skiing, and it was quicker to get up that mountain if you were single. And they would pair you with somebody else rather than going with my girlfriend. So we figured that out. Adult children, let me tell you, we got up that mountain quick. And so I learned to talk to people. But again, they never got anything out of me that was vulnerable. And I didn't even know that until I got into these programs. And I've learned to do that. I've learned to open up and share myself with you, because isn't that what life is about? Is learning to share with you. I saw something came up on my feed, or one of my program friends sent it to me, and it's this therapist. There's a clip. I don't know which Instagram or whatever, because I really don't do social media. And he said, "What is it that you need from a partner?" He's talking about married people. "And what is it that you really need from this person?" And I thought, that's a good thing to ask. "So what am I looking for?" And he said, "So basically, they should be able to take care of themselves, be responsible. You know, they go to work, they handle their finances, they can do their laundry, they cook for themselves, they clean up, all these things, right? Because that's what an adult does. So what is it that we're really looking for in relationship with other people, regardless of whether it's a romantic or just a friendship between fellow travelers?" And this is what he said. He said, "What we need in relationships is just this: to connect on a deep level. I don't want to argue with you about the laundry," which that was going on in my family, "but my parents never connected on that deep level that really gets us to know one another and reveal in a safe environment the things that go on my head that never get spoken. I've learned to start saying, my head is telling me this, and share it with the other person. And it's amazing what happens, because my head is telling me a story and it's not reality. And they'll say, 'Oh gosh, no, that's not how I'm feeling at all.' And so this is what my relationships are like this. That was never part of that before. And so I connect with people and we talk about stuff that never got talked about before. And those are the people that are helping me with my recovery. We're learning to connect and share who we are. All that other stuff we can take care of because we're responsible adults. And that promise of we will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. That's what that means. That's what that means. I'm not looking for to tell somebody what to do, or you need to go to programming. You need to run all this stuff that I learned in my family. No, that's all your business. There's two kinds of business: my business and none of my business. And I've learned to get out of everybody else's business and stay in mine." And so I was an athlete. I did a lot of performing musically, as well as, getting good grades. And I was a ski instructor, part of the ski patrol, and all kinds of stuff. And that's where I got my value from, because just being me, I didn't have any value there. I had to earn it. And that was what workaholism was about, because I got all the cash and prizes and all that stuff. I look good, smell good, and you looked at me and go, wow, right? But deep down inside, I was dying, but I didn't know it because I was so shut down. And so my father worked for General Motors, and he got transferred to Santa Barbara, California. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to live in California? So that's how I got here. And that was another higher power thing. I can't believe if that hadn't come, I would still be living in the Midwest and life would be very different. And so it's this, I didn't know how to connect and I didn't know what a safe person looked like. I didn't know how to protect myself. And so life was scary. It's not anymore because I've learned all those things in my program, as well as being able to process my hurts and the things that I held inside that caused a lot of body pain and it causes illness and all kinds of things. And little by little, I start to shed those things and recognize that my anger tells me something. I wasn't allowed to have anger growing up in my family. But underneath all that anger is something else. Anger is SADS bodyguard. And underneath that anger and that bravado is all my hurt. And I had to look underneath the anger and recognize that if when I'm angry, it's because I need something that I'm not doing for myself, or I'm expecting you to do it for me. This is where the anger comes from. And so when I learned that, there's no need for me to be angry. But I can say, I'm angry with you because da, da, da. And this is what I need from you. Totally different way of communicating because my family did the guessing game. They would just kind of blurt stuff out to the air, and I was supposed to guess what they wanted. Sort of like my mother would say, boy, a tall glass of iced tea would taste really good right now. She's talking to the air, and I picked up, I would go get it for her, right? So this is what I used to do. You didn't even have to ask me, and I would jump up and do whatever. I don't do that anymore. I learned that unless someone asks me directly for something, I don't have to do anything. And people who knew me before, they're like, isn't she going to do something? And if no one, if you don't ask me for something, I don't do anything. My inner child didn't like that at first because that was what saved her. But it's very different. My life is very different because I'm responsible for me, and I get, again, you get to be responsible for yourself. And so, I was married. I made my husband wait 9 years before I married him because I wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to be like my parents. In fact, I wasn't interested in getting married until I met a couple. And I said to myself, if marriage could be like them, then I would be interested in that. And so the time came where I finally did say to him, okay, it's time to get married. And so I was basically, we were together for 35 years and he unexpectedly died. And that just did not compute. And that's another thing that brought me into program. I had so much grief. And I didn't know what to do with it, even though I went to hospice to process it. But that day when I walked into that ACA meeting, I got it. Talked about unprocessed grief, unresolved grief, and the light bulb. And so I'd like to finish with, I was not interested in a higher power. It's like, oh, right? It was all about rules, and then they changed the rules and all that stuff. And so, but this program talked about a higher power, and I just kind of pushed that aside. You know, I'll buy all this stuff, but I'll leave that on the shelf. And then I went to a workshop early on in the pandemic, and they were talking about the steps. And the person who was presenting step three was talking about his sponsor. And the sponsor asked him how he was doing with a higher power of his choosing. And he said, well, not real well. And he said, I'm just kind of having problems with that whatever. And so his sponsor said, you know, I had the same thing. And I learned that my higher power needed to be big enough. Because, and you know, a teeny weeny itsy bitsy, I can't turn my stuff over to this little higher power. And so his sponsor said to him, It's a matter of you need to develop a humongous higher power so that you could turn all this stuff over, right? And the guy said, yeah, okay, I guess I got to work on that. And then his sponsor said, what my sponsor told me, because I was in the very same place as you. His sponsor told him, if your higher power is too small, borrow mine. He had a humongous higher power and he said, borrow mine. And that day I borrowed that guy's higher power. And that worked until my higher power was big enough. And today I have a humongous higher power. I don't worry about anything. All I do is, okay, I need some help and I'm listening and I'm led, and nobody is more surprised than I am. It's like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is what happened. I was willing. I was desperate and I was willing. And I know that you're in the same position I was. Either you're there now or you will be. And so keep coming back. Keep coming back. We change one day at a time. And over 5 years, one day at a time, I cha have changed so much. Some people don't even recognize me. And so thank you so much for inviting me, Terry and Aroki and Rich. And with that, I will close.